Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
You know, it actually never really surprises me when I either read an article or hear from acquaintances about somebody getting divorced, and they use the expression that they tried everything. And then I ask them if they ever saw a counselor or did a marriage retreat, and they either say, well, no, or maybe they went to therapy a couple of times. You know, which, by the way, isn't trying everything. And the average length of time that a couple has a problem before they seek outside help is 7 years. 7 years. Now, I don't know about you, but if I had a broken leg or wasn't feeling well, I wouldn't wait 7 years to go see a doctor. And, you know, falling in love is such a natural thing, and so people somehow think that relationships should be just as natural. And, you know, having a baby is natural too, but most of us who've had babies certainly will go out and ask people for help when we run into issues with getting the baby to sleep or potty training. And this isn't frowned upon, it's actually encouraged. And all the time I was networking and trying to get people to come to my services, I would talk to people and say, well, what's the biggest challenge you have in recommending me? And they go, well, it's so personal. We don't want to get involved in people's relationship issues, even though they're watching these people go right over the cliff in terms of their marriage. And, you know, I would talk about it for years. And I live in the south of the United States. And down here, marriage counseling, if anybody suggests it, they go, well, I'm not crazy. I don't need to go see a therapist. And it's like, I don't want crazy people. But you don't have to be crazy to get some outside help. And to paraphrase Albert Einstein, you cannot solve a problem with the same mindset that created it. So I'm talking today with Dr. Jackie Black. She is a marriage expert, educator, and coach, and she's also the host of the weekly podcast Just Between Us, also hosted on webtalkradio.net. And what I'm talking to Jackie today about is Jackie and I are both marriage coaches, which is different from therapy. And so, Jackie, Dr. Jackie, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Oh, my pleasure, Leslie. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, you know, this, when I came across your stuff, and I've been working, because as I've been a therapist since 2000, and I kept getting more and more frustrated with people who would show up in my office, this typical 7 years kind of thing, except I think the one that really blew my mind was the couple had been married for 24 years. He'd been unhappy for 19. She'd known about it for 4. They finally show up in my office, and he's done. And I said, I kind of went, well, why are you here? I mean, by the time they got to me, there wasn't anything that was going to help this couple. And so I just got, you know, I got more and more frustrated with this. And I'm sure that you probably had similar experiences. So what do you tell people when they ask you, what's the difference between a marriage coach and a marriage counselor?
It's a great question because there's really a lot of confusion. And I just want to say, Leslie, right from the beginning, that marriage coaching, any kind of coaching, is a different change process from therapy. And I really want to underscore the word different. It's not better. Uh-huh. We don't say that coaching is better than therapy. Therapy is very helpful with some things. Coaching
right.
is very helpful with other things, right? So I think that we just need to understand who's appropriate for therapy, who's appropriate for coaching, and what they can reasonably expect from each change process.
Right, and that's absolutely true, so, because there are some things that therapy actually is really, really very good for.
Yes, definitely. Coaching is not therapy. Emotional healing is not the focus of coaching. Coaching clients are not seeking emotional healing or relief from psychological pain. Mm-hmm. And there are two things that are really important to remember. And one is that coaches create what is called or build what is called the co-creative relationship with mm-hmm. clients, very different from a therapy relationship, that co-creative relationship. And coaching assumes that coaching clients are experiencing their emotional reactions to life, to events, mm-hmm. that they're capable of expressing and handling their emotions, that they're taking responsibility for what they're creating in their lives, they're mm-hmm. ready to be challenged, and they're ready to change.
Right. And, you know, most of the people that I deal with, and I, when people, the two main things that people come to me about for help with are problems communicating, and generally they've grown apart in their relationship. And neither one of those really is about trying to cope with your emotions and the general view of therapy counseling. It really is something that I think many, many people struggle with.
Well, coaching is very forward moving, right? Mm-hmm. We don't look at the past. I don't let clients talk to me a lot about the story and all the things that aren't working because I can't fix the stuff that's working. The question that I ask is, what do you want?
Uh-huh.
What's missing for you? If this relationship was everything that you wanted it to be, what would be different? What would you be experiencing?
And that sometimes is a hard question for people to answer because they're so focused on what's not working that even though you would think that would be a relatively simple switch, because if I don't have this, then the ideal relationship would be I would have this. But it's very difficult sometimes to get people to make that switch out of the negative and to look at the possibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's, and what you're saying is very important, looking at the possibilities, because that's what we really do. We are the holder of all of the possibilities. And I would say to you that if I was doing, if someone was referred to me or they came to me through a variety of places, I would have a pre-qualifying conversation, very short, that might move seamlessly into a qualifying conversation,
uh-huh.
Or it might end in either of those places, and then an enrolling conversation. So if I thought that people were going to have trouble making that shift to knowing what's possible, then I would determine that they weren't coachable, and I wouldn't let them hire me.
So can you talk a little bit more about that, about how you determine, because it might be a little bit different than some other coaches, but how you determine who's coachable versus who isn't?
Yeah. So there's two concepts. One is readiness and one is coachability. And
okay.
Readiness really is an internal experience and an external experience. It has to do with mindset. That people are recognizing that something's not working. They're recognizing that they want something they don't have or that they're not satisfied with the status quo. So that's
mm-hmm.
important. And coachability has to do with a willingness to be challenged, a willingness to explore, a willingness to move away from the status quo, and to be uncomfortable. And that is a tall order. See, that's
yeah.
a tall order for some people.
Well, and, you know, and I think that that's one of the challenges, especially when you're working with people who are married, because it's something that I say all the time, is that when you're in a relationship, you have a built-in scapegoat. That it's the other person's fault, quote-unquote fault, as opposed to, no, we, you and I, have created this relationship together, and so I have some responsibility as well as you have some responsibility in what this relationship looks like. And to me, that's just kind of the same concept as if I'm working with you as coaching. We both have input into what this relationship looks like.
Right. And I say that a little bit differently. So built-in mm-hmm. scapegoat, the other's fault, two really important concepts. And neither of those is facilitative of coaching because
nope.
we have to believe, like really buy into the concept that I have contributed equally to what we have. If I don't like what we have both contributed to creating this. But
right.
Then the good news is that we both can contribute to making it what we need and want it to be, even if
exactly.
what I want is different from what you want, which is true for most couples. See, there's this concept that we need to want the same thing, and that isn't true. A relationship can provide very different things to each person and be a very functional, highly satisfying relationship.
Well, and part of that also, I think, is dealing with our own preconceived notions. I mean, I know this is one of the things that I run into all the time, is that it's really okay that my partner doesn't feel about something the same way that I do. It doesn't make our relationship bad. It doesn't make my partner bad. It doesn't make me wrong. It's actually a fact of life.
Right. It's a fact of life. There are two additional facts that people want to be aware of, and that is expectations, conscious and unconscious, right, that you know and that you don't know, but that are operating,
right.
and assumptions.
Ah, yes. I call the assumptions the gremlins of relationships.
Yeah, assumptions and expectations, I think, are two of the problem areas. You know, when people come in, they say, well, we're having trouble communicating. I don't ever know what that is because people
right.
talk. You know, right? So it's really not about communicating. For me, most of the time what's happening is that there are expectations or assumptions that they're operating on that they are either outside their conscious awareness or that they're not talking about, or that they don't want to disclose this really important material that's inside them because they're afraid for a lot of reasons. So it isn't about
right.
communicating. It's about becoming willing to be seen and to say that which is true for you.
And that, I don't think, is something that is much encouraged in our society. I think there's a lot of fear around that. Some of it's very valid fear. Some of it is an assumed fear that if I actually step out and be honest about who I am and what I want, you're not going to love me. And that actually may be a true statement. But, you know, and so the fear is operating around, well, what do I do if you decide you don't love me anymore?
Yeah, which is a way bigger problem than we're not communicating.
Well, right. And I always love it when people come in and say, well, we don't communicate. And my response is, yes, you do. You just don't like what the other person is telling you. I mean, because there's no way we can't.
Right.
There's no way we can't communicate. But it's moving couples past that, you know, that fear of being who they are, because eventually, as I also tell people, you know, the best actors of our time are only in that role for a limited period of time. Either it's, you know, the 3 hours that they're on stage or the 6 weeks that they're in a movie. You know, when they go home, they take off that character. We can't really lie about who we are forever.
Well, fear is anticipated loss in the future. So I really want people to honor their fear because it's real. It's irrational. Fear is irrational. A lot of people say, well, there's no logical reason for your fear. Right. There's not. Fear is irrational. But it doesn't mean that it's not legitimate. And when we understand
right.
that fear is anticipated loss in the future, then we can help people to be present with their fear and do the work of relationship anyway.
So what do you recommend in helping couples or helping an individual to be able to say, yes, I'm afraid of this, and then be able to stay connected to their partner anyway?
One of the keys is the setup, which is why I love doing couples work. Because I can say to each of the partners, are you willing to provide a space for your partner to step into with you and listen with your heart, to set aside your judgments and your biases and your own needs for the moment? And listening doesn't mean they prevail. Listening means being curious, being interested in their point of view, in what they're saying about themselves in their experience. Are you willing? And once you get both partners to become willing to step into what I call relational space, that space that exists between them, then you've got real possibility for couples dialogue and for all kinds of change and growth.
So what have you found to be a successful way to get couples to agree to create that space?
The first time couples come in, or actually the intake that I do, which is normally on the phone or on Skype, because I work with clients in 8 time zones, so I work with people all over the world, and Skype,
right.
Skype is so right, so amazing. And I say, why do you want to do this work? What's in it for you?
Mm-hmm.
So I always start with the individual, and I want to know why. What will the individual get for himself or herself? Why do they want to do this? And what are their expectations of working with me?
Mm-hmm.
So we move from the I to the we before I even agree to work with them.
Okay.
Now, somebody might say, I'm not sure. I'd like to experience. I'd like to explore. I'd like to show up, but I'm not sure. I'll work with those people all along.
Right.
Well, most of the time, that's really what they're saying, but they don't know it, and I don't do that reframe with people that I don't
okay.
know.
Okay.
And I will work with those people all day long. If you keep showing up, then you're there, you're open, you're listening, and you'll get to the place, that person will get to the place where they'll either say, this doesn't work for me, or I don't like it, or I don't want to do it, or they begin to really open to it, to warm to it, and they step right in. And it becomes experiential rather than a decision. If the decision is, I'll come and I'm not sure, that's good enough for me.
Okay.
And then the next thing that should happen does. They either step into the work and there they are full on, or they back mm-hmm. away and say, you know what, I don't really want to do this.
Right. This is Happily Ever After is Just the Beginning on WebTalkRadio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm talking with Dr. Jackie Black, marriage expert, educator, and coach, about how to recognize challenges to your marriage early and where to go to get help. And continuing in that framework, I let you guys know each and every week about ways to make your marriage better. And one of those ways is to talk with me directly. You can set up a free, no-obligation consultation with me where you can share your relationship concerns in a confidential, supportive atmosphere. And while I cannot guarantee that I can help, taking directed action is always better than doing nothing. So call me today at 919-924-0463. That's 919-924-0463. Or email me at Leslie@foundationscoachingnc.com. That's Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, at foundations, F-O-U-N-D-A-T-I-O-N-S, coachingnc.com. Now let's get back to the conversation with Dr. Jackie. So you're talking about people who come in, who contact you, and they say, yeah, I want it to be better, and I'm willing to participate. So where does coaching go from there that's different from what a therapist would do?
Well, therapists normally look at the past and look for relief or healing or getting out of distress. What coaching looks at is where are you today and what do you want? What do you want that's different? If there were 2 or 3 things that you could change, and these are questions that I ask in my initial conversation, mm-hmm. if there were 2 or 3 things that you could change, what would they be? If there was 1 thing your partner could do differently, what would that would really help the situation from your perspective, what would that be? How are you contributing to this situation, and what change might you bring? When people engage with me at that level of conversation, they're already involved in coaching.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I see all the time It is about couples who have grown apart. And so one of the things is when I do that same kind of intake with people, I get, well, I want to feel more connected. I want to stop feeling like a roommate. So what kinds of things do you take people through so that they can stop, so that they can reconnect?
Yeah, everybody has their own idea about what connection is and what intimacy is. So mm-hmm. I ask a lot of questions. I think that's another difference between coaching and therapy, is that in coaching, we don't do a lot of talking. We do a lot of listening, and then we ask powerful questions. And it's the questions that actually will impel clients into a deeper exploration of themselves. And it might sound like a lot of gobbledygook, but when you're really in the presence of someone who's asking you questions that are causing you to think about, to experience, to explore what's really going on inside, it's magical. I mean, really powerful things happen. So we don't have tools necessarily or paradigms or strategies that are cookie cutter. It's so different for people. People want to connect differently. They recognize connection in a different way. So I really try to help people have more of what they want in the way that they recognize it.
Mm-hmm. And how do you help people get to that point? Because I know that there's what people say they want and what they are actually willing to go after are not always the same thing. And I think you said it very well earlier, in the willingness of people to be uncomfortable. So how do you help? I mean, you know, and that's one of the things. I mean, I think most of us are creatures of habit, and if things are going along pretty well, let's not rock the boat. They're not great, but you know what? I really don't want to go do something different, because it's, you know, how do you help people be more comfortable with being uncomfortable?
Be more comfortable with being uncomfortable, did you say?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, and that's a very specific invitation. So I'm wondering how willing you might be to be really uncomfortable this week.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I just take it in very small increments. And mm-hmm. I'm wondering how willing you might be to consider. I'm wondering how willing you might be to try this or
right.
that. That's very specifically what they brought, what they're talking about for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I love this frame. So I'm wondering if we set this up as an experiment for 2 days.
Okay.
Think there might be some value in observing X or Y for a day or two. People love experimenting and observing. And I think that two important aspects of relationship work is becoming a good observer of ourselves and a good observer of our partners. There are so many times that clients will come back and say, oh my God, I had no idea I did that. Or I didn't know that I felt that way or reacted or responded that way. So when you invite people to observe themselves and each other, that can sometimes just open something wide, you know, so wide.
Well, and that's interesting that you say that, because I've discovered that most people generally don't have a difficult time observing their partners, although I think the way in which they do it isn't always productive. But there's a much more difficult time that people have observing themselves. And I know that as a partner, it's really hard to say, this is what you do. You know, when this happens, this is what you do. Now, I don't do that. Now they're into this whole argument about whether or not it's done. And I spend a lot of time, I tell people, it's like, if you don't have a video camera or you don't have a tape recorder, you're not going to remember a conversation exactly the same way. So, you know, so let's quit arguing about who said what when, and let's talk about what the underlying feelings were. But how do you get people to observe themselves more productively?
Well, first of all, I don't let people talk to each other about each other. I say, because I can't hear what you're saying about me. I can hear what you're saying about you. So one of the foundational pieces is to learn how to talk in iMessage feedback. I think, mm-hmm. I feel, I need, I want, I like, I prefer, I don't like. I really felt hurt. I don't feel seen when, right? Mm-hmm. I want to feel seen. I want to experience this when I say that. So if we can really start focusing our language on behaviors that are doable instead of on feelings, because if you say, I want to feel loved, I don't know what that means.
Right.
When I tell a story, when I tell a story, I really want you to listen to the story until the end, and then I'd love to hear your feelings, right? Listen to my feelings. What are you thinking? You know, like, don't hear it from a problem perspective, but I really would like this. I'd like to hear your feedback about X and so. So if we can talk to each other and we can really keep it at a behavior level, not a feeling level, that really helps.
Well, and I agree, because this is when interpretation assumptions come back into play, that, you know, here's how I imagine this would be, and if you don't do it that way, then it means you don't love me. Whereas if I can tell you, well, here are the behaviors that happen, that when these behaviors happen, I feel loved, I feel heard, I feel accepted. You know, I always tell my couples, I said, okay, what I need to know from you is, if I were standing in your kitchen with a clipboard, what would I be checking off that this person was, you know? Well, it's like, well, this person would be loving me. Okay, that's great. Give me the behavior so that I can check it off. Oh, well, when I come into the room, they look up, they say hello, they give me a kiss when they come home.
See?
Great. Now,
right.
Now we're on to something.
Yeah, and I do the same thing, except I say, if I were standing in your home with you and I had a camera, what would mm-hmm. the camera be seeing?
Right.
It's the same thing with triggers. When people get triggered, I don't ever let them tell me the story, because people can mm-hmm. be in their story all day long. But tell me, when they're talking about or describing what the trigger event was, if I had a camera, what would the camera be seeing? And it's a very non-confrontational, non-judgmental way of beginning to sort and open and see what's going on and what the behaviors are. There are two quick things that I'd like to offer, and that is the idea of critical moments and caring behaviors. There are really mm-hmm. four critical moments in every day. When people get up, when the first mm-hmm. person leaves the house, when the second person returns, and when they go to bed, or when the first person
right.
goes to bed. And mm-hmm. if people can connect and they can decide what connecting is, maybe it's a hug, maybe it's a squeeze, maybe they can decide what that is. But if people can
right.
decide that they will attend to each other at those four moments, literally, Leslie, moments,
right.
that goes a long way to create connection. And the second piece is caring behaviors. I invite clients to interview each other. And what are the behaviors that if I did these behaviors, they have to be simple and doable and not expensive.
Uh-huh. Right.
If I did these things, that you will feel loved, valued, respected, seen, understood, important.
Right.
And then they interview each other, and they actually come up with those doable behaviors. And I tell couples they should have a list of 10 at all times, and then they rotate a couple off and put a couple on, and that they must attend to caring behaviors every day. And it makes all the difference in the world, one or two behaviors every day.
Right, and I see the value of the caring behaviors. And by the way, what people need to get through is that I don't need to understand why this is important to my partner. I just need to accept that it is important to my partner. And if I can,
yes.
Yeah. And for me, it's like, if my partner makes a request and I can do it and it will make my partner feel good, why wouldn't I do that? You know, it's like, it seems a very simple equation, but, you know, and unfortunately, relationships really are that simple. They're just not that easy. But you talk about the caring behaviors. What about the impact of harsh behaviors?
Oh, listen, they are, they're deadly. Criticism,
yeah.
For example. Yeah, there are some behaviors that chip away at the behavior. I mean, chip away at the intimacy, at the closeness, at the trust. And it's so much easier to preserve and maintain what you have. Repair is possible, but it's a tremendous mm-hmm. amount of work. So I really want to support people to do as much as they can to preserve, to maintain, to grow, to deepen, and not go down the repair road if they can at all avoid it. That said, repair is absolutely possible.
Well, yes, it is. But I think that you're like me, that it's always better to keep something in good stead than have to fix it once it gets broken. And you know, so what do you say to people about marriage coaching, and how soon, you know, what are some triggers that people might want to consider that we actually might be running into some problems here?
Well, if you notice that you're not really listening or you're tuning your partner out, if you notice that you bristle or he or she bristles when you approach, that you're not laughing and enjoying each other, you're not choosing to spend time together the way you used to, that life is, perhaps there aren't any problems per se, but life has become more logistical, more transactional than it is
right.
intimate and close. Yeah. And those are big problems. I mean, we're not just talking about infidelity and the big stuff. This little stuff, even though we're saying that it's little, it's very important. It can be very damaging. And it's like a light bulb. Light bulbs just go out, but you know what? They don't. They dim a little bit mm-hmm. and a little bit and a little bit over time. And that's what you really want to pay attention to.
And I think that's a critical point, because I've actually had people, when they'll start to say something and they go, well, I don't know if this is really important. I said, the fact it just entered your mind makes it important.
Mm-hmm,
because,
I agree.
You know, if you're thinking there might be, and I don't like to use the word problem because that's too, but it's, if you're thinking that something is off, it more than likely is. Now, again, it doesn't necessarily mean it's big, bad, and horrible, but if you don't address it, it could become big, bad, and horrible.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I always say to people, if you think your marriage is in trouble, it probably is.
Well, and part of this is if your partner is coming to you with some concerns. I mean, that's one of the big things. It's, you know, I always tell men, you're in trouble when your wife stops talking about what you thought was a problem, unless you've actually come up with a resolution to it, because she's now gone underground and she's now planning her escape. And the guys are thinking, oh, this is great because, you know, she's not nagging me anymore. And I'm like going, oh, no, wrong. And so, but that's part of it, because my partner says there's a problem, but hey, I'm okay. Things are going great for me. I don't want to go into that.
Yeah, but you see, I never believe that.
Well,
yeah, I never believe that. And I always say to people, when did you know what you didn't want to know you knew?
Ooh, can you say that again?
I'd be happy to. When did you know what you didn't want to know you knew?
Wow, I love that. Because you're right. People always know. It's just the doing that's scary. And this is where I really wanted to have you on to talk about this coaching process, because it doesn't have to be scary. Now, yes, there is going to be discomfort with this, because anything worth having is worth, you know, focusing on and learning to do better.
Well, there's a couple things. It will be scary. It will be scary. Why will it be scary? Because if people want to step into this, yes, but and if people want to step into this process, it's because they care. They're connected. They're attached. Mm-hmm. They have investment in themselves and in their relationship. And that means the more invested and involved people are with each other and with their marriage and wanting to be married, wanting the relationship mm-hmm. to work, the more invested they are, the higher the risk of loss. So the more you care, the higher the risk of loss. And remember that fear is anticipated loss in the future. So it's going to
right.
be scary. The other thing is we're more hurtable. The more we care and the more invested and involved we are, the more hurtable we are.
Well, and I think that that's a lot of it, because people kind of like, well, if I don't look at it, if I don't go in and dig around in that and try to make it better, then I won't get hurt. But that's not a true statement, because if I care, I'm going to get hurt either way. So I kind of look at, well, let's make it the best it can possibly be, and I don't want to say eliminate the hurt, but kind of put a protective coating around it.
And how's it working for you now? Right? The concept is only a cognitive construct. It doesn't actually mean people are out of discomfort. The fact that they
right.
don't want to think about it, if you say to them, well, how's that working for you? Well,
right.
I'm not comfortable. I'm not happy. Right. And see, that's
right.
the thing to get people to really understand, is that they're already unhappy or dissatisfied or in some kind of distress and recognizing it. So
right.
the only thing
and
that they have to lose is the unhappiness and the distress. It can
right.
be better. It's possible.
And they're putting energy towards that discomfort anyway. So the question is, are you putting energy
yeah.
towards discomfort that's leading you away from what you want, or are you putting that energy into being uncomfortable in getting what you want?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think that's a really critical piece. And you know, I mean, and the thing is that, you know, most of us don't know what we don't know about marriage. And you know, but it's really funny, because I don't think anybody would ever say, "Oh, well, we expect this sports team over here not to have a coach." Or we expect, you know, we're surprised when Serena Williams shows up to the US Open with a coach. I mean, anybody who's really, really good at what they've done has had some sort of a coach, whether it's, you know, a mentor who's taken them under their wing to show them, you know, how to navigate the ins and outs of their profession, or a sports coach or whatever. But somehow we think marriage is different, that there aren't people out there that can, you know, give us the same kind of information that a sports coach does. And so I'm with you, Dr. Jackie. I think that marriage is worth it. Yeah. So
absolutely. And one of the biggest myths perpetrated on the culture is that love is enough. Because love is not enough. And if we don't have essential relationship success skills and tools and strategies and ways of thinking about things and understanding how to repair hurt feelings, you know, those
mm-hmm.
kinds of things, then all the love in the world is never going to be enough to actually build a relationship that two people can live in and be joyful in for years.
Right. So, Dr. Jackie, can you tell people where they can find you?
Sure. Thanks, Leslie. I'm at drjackieblack.com. That's drjackieblack.com. And on webtalkradio.net, my podcast, Just Between Us.
So, listeners, you've got the information. You've got the opportunity to make your marriage the way that you want it to be. The only question is are you willing to go get it? And so keep listening and learning about what you can do to have that terrific marriage. And until then, stay loving.